This is Digital Story Podcast number 743, June 16th, 2020. Today's theme is questions I'm asking myself before wielding a camera out on the streets. I'm Derek Story. I saw an aerial photograph yesterday of a weekend protest in Los Angeles, and for as far as the eye could see, people filled a wide boulevard from side to side. As a street photographer, my initial impulse was to be a part of it, to document this momentous moment in time. But I had to remind myself that this is not a Sunday farmer's market, and that I need to be honest about justifying my presence there. Those are the thoughts that are the lead story of today's TDS Photography Podcast. Over the years, I've earned a fair amount of street cred for my urban photography. I've led workshops, published photos, and written articles. But all of that means nothing right now in any big city in America. Why? Because what's going on at the moment is far more important than any photo project that I may be working on. To be honest, my credentials are not valid in downtown LA, nor Atlanta, nor Minneapolis. But that doesn't mean that I stand on the sidelines or that I can't document what's going on. I just need to ask myself some hard questions first to ensure that I proceed with integrity. And I have some of those questions right here. I have three of them that I have to have this conversation with myself before I head out and start snapping away, right? Because in all honesty, I don't want to be snapping away. I want to proceed with intention, okay? So what are these three questions that I've been asking myself concerning street photography and what is going on in the streets of America right now? First of all, what is to be gained by my presence? So my view is that every person who is peacefully protesting has a purpose. So as a photographer, what would mine be? To be able to post a cool image on Instagram is not a legitimate reason to be there taking pictures. I need to do better than that. In other words, my view is that everyone there peacefully protesting, or that are just part of the scene in general, if they're choosing to be there, they're choosing to be there for a reason. They have a specific reason for being there. What is my specific reason for being there taking pictures of them doing what they're doing? It can't be just because, hey, this is something going on that I need to photograph and share with my friends. That, to me, doesn't cut it. Because what happens to me in my mind, and believe me, this is all just my process. I'm sharing it with you so that, you know, maybe it will add something to your process as well. But, you know, what I'm thinking is then my purpose for what I'm doing needs to be on a similar level to other people's purposes that are there as well. And I just need to think about that for a second. You know, why am I doing this? What is to be gained by my presence? And I've asked myself that question a number of times, and I have to tell you, I haven't come up with a clear answer to it yet. You know, I really haven't. I'm not going to be, you know, the defining voice of the 2020 protests in America. Maybe some photographer or some writer will rise to that level. They're probably more knowledgeable about the subject than I am. They're probably more immersed in the world than I am. And therefore, you know, I can just take that one off the list because I know that's not going to happen. I know I'm not going to be that person. Now, can I contribute in some way? And I'm going to get to that in a second, because just because I should or should not be out there taking pictures doesn't mean, like I said in the opening, that I should be standing on the sidelines. Okay, let's get to the second question. And this is a big one for me. Am I confident that my images would send the message that I intend? I think this is a real tricky one. People are often blinded by their biases. A perfect example is someone who tells you they don't have any, right? That right away just tells me, dude or dudette, you have biases. Trust me, you do. And the fact that you think that you don't just tells me that you are blind to your own, okay? So I acknowledge that all of us have our biases in all sorts of different areas. Now, let's lay that, I think, more than a possibility, over the fact that my personal feeling is that we need some knowledge about our subject to actually report on it. For example, I'm not going to go out and be able to accurately report on geological uplift in the Eastern Sierra without really doing some research first, without, you know, talking to people, without spending some time really thinking and learning about what this is. I would have really no idea how to photograph it. You know, I'm just looking at a big rock, right? A big rock. Whereas once I learned about what happens with geological uplift, then I could photograph that big rock in a way that tells the story of what happened. And with some luck, it would be close to being accurate based on what we know right now. Having some knowledge about the subject, I think, is important. Now, as I sit here right now and talk to you, I have never been on the receiving end of racism. So even though I hate the thought of it, I'm not sure about how qualified I am to document it, to report it. Again, think about looking at a big rock and really understanding what's going on and just seeing it as a rock. You know, there's a big difference between the two. And I think in this area, there is just as big a difference. Okay. So I'm not confident where all my blind spots are, and I'm not confident about the knowledge that I have to document, to take pictures of this particular thing that's going on. Now, you're going, well, why would that make any difference? You know, okay, you're not claiming to be an expert in this area. You're right, I'm not. But you know what? Me going out there with my camera changes the dynamic of wherever I'm standing. And we know this, right? We know this. If I go out there with, let's say, whatever camera, let's say that I take my Olympus Pen F, I've got maybe a little zoom lens on there if I'm trying to cover a broader area. Well, okay, I'm separating myself from, you know, what other people have. So most people are out there with smartphones if they're documenting things. They're not out there with a camera that costs over $1,000. They're using something they already have. So by my very presence, standing there with a camera, maybe with a camera bag, you know, I'm making some sort of statement that I know what's going on, and I'm causing various reactions of those around me. I think you might remember, if you listen to the podcast where we talked about when we were our workshop in March, when we were in the Los Angeles Garment District. It wasn't an area we had planned to go, but because of the pandemic, it threw our whole schedule upside down. And I thought, okay, let's take a shot at it. We can get to it from where we are relatively easily. Well, as it turned out, that was super interesting for a lot of reasons. One, because I hadn't researched it, right? Because it wasn't in the original schedule, right? It was not in the original schedule at all. And so that I did it, you know, kind of on the fly, sort of like what a lot of people are thinking about going out and photographing what's happening in the streets right now. So we get there, we show up with our cameras, we stand out by the way that we're dressed, and we really stand out by the cameras that we're wielding, okay? They were not something that people normally see from the people who are normally there. And we caused a physical reaction by our presence. We were distracting to the business that went on, even though we had no intention of being distracting. We caused some anxiety in people because they didn't know why we were there taking pictures. We were a disruptive force there for no particular reason other than that we wanted to document the widest variety of LA street life that we could. Had it been in the schedule, had I done my research like I did all the other places in the workshop beforehand, it would have jumped out at me that this wasn't a good idea. This was not a good idea. And as it turned out, a few of our workshop participants were really uncomfortable with the situation, as they expressed in the interview that we did with them in the earlier podcast. I think that is a good example of what I'm talking about relating to what's going on right now. In other words, if I'm going to go out and I'm going to do some serious work with good intentions in the streets right now, I really need to educate myself open-mindedly about what's going on so that when I get there, I can be a good reporter. I can be a good image maker. And just like if I would have done the same thing with the Garment District in Los Angeles when we went there, then, you know, I would have known that, look, we don't go in with big cameras. We don't go in with long lenses. We don't go in dressed the way that we're dressed. We don't go in as a group, right? Maybe we, you know, have a little separation. And maybe we just don't go at all, right? Maybe we just don't go at all, which I'm thinking would have been the wisest choice, okay? That was a really good lesson for me, and I draw on that lesson for what's happening right now. And then the images that I took, which is, you know, the point that we're on right now, am I confident that my images would send the message that I intend? Well, I look at the images that I took in the Garment District, and for the most part, I like them. But I'm not completely confident that I have done that area and those people, you know, a real service in terms of recording what's really happening, because I don't think I was able to, because what happens is my presence changed the way that it was normally. In other words, when I had the ability to photograph based on my presence being there was not what is normally going on there. You know, I would have to spend some time there. I would have to really get to know, you know, how to be. Maybe I would have to get to know some people first, have them be comfortable with me, have them accept me. Then maybe I could start to get some images that really reflected what's going on there. So even though I have some shots that I like, I am not confident at all that they are shots that reflect what that area is really like. And that is something that is interesting. I am not overthinking the situation. If my intentions are good, I am not overthinking that situation at all. So that's another point. And boy, that one is sticky, I have to say. Am I confident that my images would really send the message that I intend? So then that gets us to the third question, which is, what is the best way for me to participate? As I thought about that, it dawned on me, this process that I'm going through, trying to determine if I should be out in the streets right now or not, is worth sharing. That is how I can participate. If I can help send people out to take pictures that should be there, or that are not disruptive, or that are accurately depicting what is happening around them, then I'm actually helping the overall cause. So I have found my niche, I think, I have found my niche in the sense that the process that I'm going through trying to decide whether I should be there or not is something that I'm going to share with as many people as possible, hopefully getting them to think about that and hopefully having a positive impact on the situation that's happening all across the U.S. right now. And really, in to some degree, in many parts of the world at the same time. See, here's the thing. Photography can be such a powerful medium. And I think that this moment in time presents a good opportunity, not so much to take pictures of it, but for us to talk about the responsibilities that come with that power. In other words, the same way that I learned lessons the hard way in the Garment District in LA and I'm using those lessons to apply to this situation, then maybe I can share that information, those questions with you, and then you don't have to make the mistake that I made in the garment district, right? You don't have to make that mistake. You can say, hey, guess what? I'm going to let Derek take the hit on that one, but I'm going to take away from it some of the things that he's thinking about as a result of that experience. So in that spirit of balancing intention with knowledge, with just being honest with yourself, in that spirit, I'm going to say that I'm going to try to be as honest with myself before taking my camera out on the streets. And I have been out in downtown Santa Rosa a few times, but I haven't gone out and photographed anything during active protests because, again, I just haven't resolved these issues enough for me to do that. But I have gone out afterwards. I have talked to people. I do have some images. I'm actually sharing an image with this podcast that I took one early morning after the protests. And I'm still thinking about this a lot. I hope you found this useful, not only for what's going on right now, but just for in general, just some things to think about before we pull out our camera and start sticking it in other people's faces. Let's make sure that we're doing what we think we're doing. Just released, Organizing and Archiving Digital Photos. I'm so glad this is out. So this is one that I recorded for LinkedIn Learning and lynda.com. And when I first, I've got to tell you the backstory first, and then I'll tell you about the title. So actually, you know, the backstory is kind of interesting and really why I wanted to do this spot. Then I'll tell you a little bit about the title itself. But you can guess by the title, right? Organizing and Archiving Digital Photos. All right. So here's the backstory. It's kind of fun. So I was just talking about when I was down in LA for the workshop. So what I had done, I really had this beautiful plan before the pandemic began to encroach upon it. And that in March, I was going to go down. We were going to do this workshop. We're going to be at Venice Beach and Santa Monica Pier. I have photographed those areas many times. It's fun. It's light. There are a lot of characters. It's interesting. People generally very receptive to photography. Okay. So how we ended up at the Garment District is, you know, among all of that, you know, that just shows you how things can affect other things. The second part of that plan was then, while I was still down there, I would go to Carpinteria as I'm heading back and spend a week at the studios there recording, organizing, and archiving digital photos. Great plan. Saves me a trip from Northern California to Southern California. I do back-to-back events, and then after I record that, then I head home. Well, while we're down in LA, the folks at LinkedIn decided that, you know what, we're nervous about COVID-19, as they should have been, and that we don't want people coming from all over the world to these recording studios on airplanes and all the different ways that they get here, coming here and then dealing with our staff. We feel like that might not be a good idea. So we're terminating for now, or postponing, all recording on the site. So then that recording got canceled temporarily, or postponed, however you want to say it. But I know darn well how things like this go. If you have a million things lined up and you postpone all of them, then the odds of where you're going to be in that queue when it comes back, who knows? I mean, we still can't go down there and record. It's still not open there, right? And then even once they do, where am I in that queue? So I went and thought about this. I went home, thought about this, and I go, you know what? I've been recording these titles in my studio. I know this one we had planned on doing some live action and stuff. I think I can make a really good title here in Santa Rosa. So I pitched it to them. I said, look, I think I can do this in my place. And they went for it. They said, yes, you have a good track record. We have a lot of confidence in you. Let's do it. That was great. So actually, my first project, when I returned here in March, when shelter in place came down, like right after I got here, was that project. That project. That's why I didn't do other things like the video conferencing title first because, you know, I wanted to go ahead and fulfill this contract and then get on to the next thing. So then I moved on to my own stuff, digitizing family memories and video conferencing and all that good stuff. So that's the backstory on how that happened. Now, once I finished that title, I finished it in 10 days here. Then it went into the machine there, and they're telling me that they thought it was going to come out in July. And I'm going, oh my gosh, but you know, everyone is home right now. Can't we move that up? Well, and there's all sorts of reasons why they couldn't, and I understand them. But the fact of the matter is that even though I recorded it in March, it wasn't going to come out till July. Well, as it happened, they were able to move it up. So it actually came out now in early June, which is great news, right? Because I, you know, the sooner the better on this sort of thing. So what this title is about is, you know, preserving our digital assets. And I get into all sorts of stuff. There is an original version of this title in the online training library right now from 2011. People are still watching it. But I wanted to do something that was, you know, much more modern. A lot of things have changed in that amount of time. I talk about creating an ultralight backup system for travel. I talk about, you know, ways, you know, that we can use our mobile devices with our digital cameras. I talk about internal versus external hard drives and how both have their roles and how to balance that. I get into RAID 0 versus RAID 1. I talk about using applications to organize our photos and, you know, manage versus reference libraries versus a Finder-based, you know, organizational system. And then what do we do about stuff that we archived 10 years ago on hard drives? Well, we just can't leave them there forever, so we have to do something about that because those devices have a shelf life as well, and we don't want to have to go and fire one up one day only to discover that it had failed and we were counting on being able to retrieve that content. So there's all sorts of stuff like that. I really like it. I watched a whole bunch of movies from it again the other day right after it came out, and I felt pretty good about it. I think you will like it. So if you're part of LinkedIn Learning, it's available right now. If you're a lynda.com person, it's available right there. Okay, you can get it in either place. And if you're not a member of either one, I think both have trials so that you can check it out. And it won't cost you anything. The links to both of them and for the introductory movie and so forth are in the show notes. So you can just click on the link and go over there. But I like the title. I think you'll like the title. And if you get a chance to watch it, drop me a note and let me know what you think. Are Canon's rumored super telephoto lenses a serious threat to Olympus? So normally I don't comment on link bait. I sort of felt like this is. Maybe I'm being too hard on it, only because I'm a Micro Four Thirds shooter and I was kind of going, ah. But I have the link to the entire article, which includes the comments. It's on F-Stoppers. I have the link to it in the show notes. So you can go and check it out for yourself. I'm going to read you one paragraph from it, and then I'll comment on it. Canon is offering super telephoto lenses as well as 1.4 and 2x teleconverters. What does this mean? A full-frame Canon mirrorless body will be able to shoot at 600 millimeters and 800 millimeters, heavily encroaching on where Olympus does its best work, but with a significantly better sensor. Now, admittedly, the widest aperture of F11 lens, and whether the 100 to 500 millimeter, 600 millimeter, or 800 millimeters are compatible with the teleconverters is up for debate, but it's probably unlikely. I would say that 1600 millimeters at f22 and the autofocus still working is borderline impossible, but I'm not sure on that matter. So, you know, the whole thrust of this article is that Olympus has carved out this niche for themselves, being the lightweight wildlife photographer's best choice, and that Canon coming out with these lenses is going to encroach on that. And the lenses that they're talking about, They list them here. I'll run through them real quick. The 50mm f1.8, 85mm f2, 70-200mm f4, 100-500mm f4.5 to 7.1, 600mm f11, 800mm f11, and then two teleconverters, 1.4 and 2.0. And I'm just really kind of thinking as I'm reading this article, why? What is the real purpose? I mean, it sort of goes back to what I was talking about street photography. What is really your intention here for doing this article? Because these are just very different animals. And I'm talking about the Canon full frame system and the Olympus Micro Four Thirds system. If you take for wildlife, a couple of the Olympus lenses, their Pro F2.8 that goes up to the zoom lens that goes up to 150 millimeters. And then the 300mm f4, you take those out and you shoot with them. People in the comments of this article get all wrapped around the axle about, you know, well, but that actually, that f4 300mm really translates to f8 if you put it on a full frame in terms of actual depth of field and all that kind of stuff. They're really kind of getting into that sort of stuff. But the fact of the matter is, and I think in terms of exposure, in terms of aperture, F4 is still F4, regardless of what happens with the other physics of the lens. And I'm just saying, look, if you want full frame, you've already decided that you're willing to carry heavier glass that possibly is slower as well. If you want to travel lighter, but you still want to shoot wildlife, you still want to be able to get those birds off in a distance, then you're probably okay with a smaller sensor. That's the trade-off that you're willing to make in order to travel lighter and still get excellent images. And that smaller sensor in good light really isn't an issue. And unless you're making huge prints, which actually I have seen from Micro Four Thirds sensor, and it's still good, but let's just give the huge prints to the full frame folks for sake of this argument. But unless you're doing that, then you're probably going to be, you know, just fine with Micro Four Thirds. If you really want full frame, then you don't mind the trade-offs that come with that, which is just carrying things that weigh more or a little bit slower in terms of maximum aperture. In other words, all Canon is doing is giving us another choice, which in the world of photography is a great thing. We like choices because then that way we can pick among the choices and hopefully one of these things is the best thing for us. So the main reason why I bring this up, what my intention is on this particular post, is that when you read stuff like that, resist the urge to have a reaction to it, right? Because I think they are just, you know, creating articles in the news cycle. And I don't think that their heart is really in this discussion. If you read the article, I'll be curious to see what you think. But to me, it's just so clear, it's just so obvious that I'm not going to say one is better than the other. They're different. And I'm going to pick the one that's right for me. Let's take care of a little virtual camera club news right now. I want to talk about the other two titles that I have out. I'm sure you're familiar with them at this point. The Essential Steps to Impressive Video Conferencing. That's a 1 hour training on really how to look good on Zoom, Skype, Microsoft Teams, all that, so that you're confident when you're on camera and participating with others. And then you can really think about the topics that are at hand instead of worrying about that you look terrible or you sound terrible. Okay, that is the thrust of that. And I think that training does a good job. It's available on thenimblephotographer.com. You can order it and I'll turn it around to you. I get it to you as soon as I can, right after you order it, usually within an hour or two. And then Digitizing Family Memories is also there. And that's dealing with that shoebox or those shoeboxes or those crates full of images accumulated over the years by family members with terrible cameras for the most part. And then you want to digitize them and preserve those memories. That's what that movie's for. Both of those are available right now at thenimblephotographer.com. Just click on workshops because the physical workshops are there and the online workshops are there. They're all there. Just click on workshops. and check these out. I think both of them, depending on what you need, will serve you well, and I think you will be entertained at the same time. I want to thank our Inner Circle members for their support, not only for this podcast, but for projects like I was just talking about. You know, they are a big part of the motivation for me to keep things going. I don't talk about that very much, but it's interesting because we have the Inner Circle and because I respect them so much that I want to create things for them. And then suddenly wanting to create things for them leads to projects like the video conferencing title and digitizing family memories, which then even people outside of the Inner Circle benefit from. And that's kind of the whole thing about our Inner Circle folks. The stuff that they're doing, the contributions that they make, benefit everyone. They benefit everyone by making this podcast more stable financially, by inspiring me to do things. They are a great group, and I just want to recognize them and thank them for supporting this entire community. If you're interested in becoming an Inner Circle member, you can just click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Also want to mention our good friends over at Red River Paper. They are the experts when it comes to inkjet printing. Yes, they sell paper. Yes, they sell all sorts of different types in practically every size imaginable. Yes, they do all of that, but it's more than that. They have tutorials. They have trainings. They have reviews. They have other goodies that enhance your printing experience, like really cool envelopes that are perfectly matched to the fine art greeting card stock that you buy. At the same time, you can get your ink. You don't have to go here for your ink and here for your paper and all that. They'll take care of that for you. They are one-stop shopping for inkjet printing. They're also our longest-running sponsor. They also have a rocking Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. A big thanks to them for supporting this show and this community. All right, that's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'm working on more great stuff for next week. Until then, stay safe, be creative, and I'll see you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.